I think it made Americans, including elected leaders, it made them wary of military interventions in far-flung places in the world. Not altogether a bad thing, I think. I think Vietnam, they refer to the ghosts of Vietnam in political parlance, I guess you'd say. And I think that it affected, therefore, views on when the United States should intervene, under what conditions it should go in militarily. And I think for about a decade or so, that held. Over time, I think the memory of it, or at least the perception of what Vietnam represented, changed, and you saw more military interventions, of course.
In your writings, you make the case that the Vietnam War was avoidable. People in hindsight would say, yes, that's absolutely true, but that was more difficult to see at the time, wasn't it? And in what way could it have been avoidable at that time?
Well, I think you ask a very good question about this. Was it avoidable in the context of its own time? Because as you say, that's key. I think what's crucial, and maybe what I find in terms of my own work, the most important finding in my research, is that at the time, whether you're talking the late 40s, in terms of the French War and backing what the French were doing, because they, of course, were there before the Americans, or later on, under Lyndon Johnson in the mid-1960s, under Richard Nixon in the late 60s. At the time, there were people who said, Mr. President, this is not a war that the United States needs to fight. This is not a national security priority for the United States. In other words, what happens in Vietnam isn't going to be decisive to our security. And moreover, it's not at all clear that we can win, even with major American ground forces, even with sustained bombing of North Vietnam and of enemy-held areas in the South. So I think your question is good, but I do feel confident in saying at the time there were these skeptics and pessimists who, moreover, argued that it is avoidable, that you can choose a path that avoids this becoming an American war.
Are there parallels between the Vietnam War and the wars that we're involved in today in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Syria?
Yeah, I think there are parallels. I think the most important one is that what Vietnam shows and what these later conflicts show is that local actors are ultimately key. So if you're the United States, you need to have a local government that fulfills its end of the bargain, that does what it's supposed to do, that is committed to working to sustain the country, to protect its citizens. That was ultimately lacking in South Vietnam. That's not to say that there weren't South Vietnamese who were committed and who were courageous and who wanted to defend South Vietnam. There just weren't enough of them. And the local governments, a whole string of governments in South Vietnam, really, were never sufficiently popular and didn't have sufficient popular support. You could say the same about our more recent conflicts. So that in Kabul, for example, in Afghanistan, just to give one, same kind of phenomenon. Too much corruption. You have too much of a central government that is lacking in these prerequisites. It doesn't matter how powerful you are as the United States. It doesn't matter how much military power you can bring to bear. If you don't have that local government, your power is ultimately limited. So it's really a question in a way of, it's an issue of the limits of American military power.
Does it suggest that we did not learn the lessons of the Vietnam War, or that we just never learn?
I think it does suggest a failure to learn, or at least a failure to remember what we've learned. I think that there is in the United States a tendency to believe that technology, and in particular America's technological might, will win out in the end. And so it becomes very seductive to believe, maybe in the age of Trump, as it has been the case in previous administrations, that surely our tremendous military power, which is unlike anything the world has ever seen before, will prevail. And the temptation to use military power becomes, if not irresistible, at least very strong. And I think that's what we've seen. It involves, at least on some level, a failure to remember or to learn in the first place what Vietnam demonstrated about the limits of military power.
You have written a great deal about Ho Chi Minh, of course, who is a key figure in the whole Vietnam War. And you say that he may just be the most misunderstood figure in recent history. That seems a rather mild or kind assessment of someone who forced his own people into re-education camps and was brutal to his own countrymen. Talk a little bit about how you reach that assessment.
I do think that Ho Chi Minh is a really fascinating figure and very important in the 20th century international history. And in my last book, Embers of War, I look very closely at his rise and how he became the most important leader of the Vietnamese nationalist movement, if you want to call it that. And I am ultimately somewhat sympathetic to him. I think that he was a very dedicated nationalist. He believed for a very long time, maybe this is part of the reason for my sympathy, believed for a very long time that the United States, which itself was a product of an anti-colonial reaction to Great Britain, the United States would be there for him and for his country. So you could argue that he was even naive in the length of time that he thought the Americans would come to support what he was doing. Now, you're quite right that his government could be brutally repressive. I do not in any way wish to romanticize either Ho or his lieutenants, his government. But I think that he was ultimately a nationalist. I think he could have worked with the United States. This is another one of those what-ifs. I think he could have worked with the United States. I'm not saying he would have been an American ally. He did believe in Marxism-Leninism as the best course of development for his country. But he's a powerful and, to my mind, in some way, what's the word? Well, sympathetic figure.
Let's talk about people who are somewhat forgotten in these historical retrospectives about the Vietnam War, and that is the American soldiers.
Yes.
The people who fought it, and the South Vietnamese soldiers as well. That war seemed to have a tremendous effect, psychological effect, in ways that we didn't see in World War I or World War II, as brutal as those wars were.
Well, we should say that the experience of the American soldier in Vietnam varied considerably. And so, you know, some came back from the experience one way, others were much more deeply affected, I guess is a fair thing to say. I think an important reason for the difference, I've thought a lot about this, is that I think as the war went on, so as we get into 1967, 68, 69, 70, American soldiers came to realize, maybe just in their gut, and maybe more intellectually, that, you know, our leaders aren't quite committed to this thing. Lyndon Johnson can't fully explain why I'm over here getting shot at, risking my life. What is the purpose of this? I think that became harder and harder to answer for many, not all. Some were committed right to the end. The other thing to be said about this, of course, is that now we know, because of archival releases, that skepticism was warranted. That is to say, we now know that Johnson and Nixon and Kennedy before them did have these doubts about the importance of this struggle. So I think it's partly that. It's partly also the conditions under which they fought in Vietnam. Not knowing who was friend, not knowing who was enemy, that was very trying. A sense that leaders back home were maybe micromanaging the war. Finally, I guess one would say about the response, finally maybe the response or the reaction when they returned to the United States was difficult in many cases.
How do you assess the impact of the anti-war movement, which was extremely strong by the late 60s and into the 70s? Did that also add to the failure of this military intervention?
I think that the legacy or the importance of the anti-war movement is much debated by historians, and people come down reasonably on different sides of this. I think the anti-war movement got some things wrong. It tended to romanticize Ho Chi Minh and the Viet Cong. It tended, in my view, to exaggerate the economic motivations for American intervention, which I don't happen to think were all that important. But it's also the case, in my view, that the anti-war movement, including obviously people on college campuses, including ultimately members of Congress, even though they were late, I think, in coming, members of the press, ordinary people. I think that the anti-war movement limited the options available to first Lyndon Johnson and then Richard Nixon, which is to say that they put limits on what the president could do in terms of escalating the war. And I think that when Richard Nixon comes in, he understands that he has to reduce to some extent American involvement in this war. And that's at least partly a function of this anti-war agitation. So it had a role.
We're talking about the Vietnam War with Professor Frederick Logoval of the International Studies Department at Harvard University. Thanks so much for coming in and sharing your insights about this important event in 20th century history.
It's been a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
I'm Judy Valente.